Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. This hour, why fewer women with breast cancer should be treated with chemo. That's the word from a large study published by the New England Journal of Medicine that used a gene test on tumors to determine which women didn't need chemotherapy. Their breast cancer would respond to other treatments. Today, a discussion about how this will change the way some women are treated for breast cancer and how genetic analysis of cancer is influencing the treatment of the disease. As our guests join us, you may have questions about the latest therapies, including drug therapy for breast cancer, particularly if you or someone in your family has been diagnosed with breast cancer. And if you've had chemotherapy, how helpful was it? What does this news say to you? We welcome your questions and your experience. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at CarrieNPR. Dr. Larry Norton is with us. He's Senior Vice President at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, where he's also Medical Director at the Lauder Breast Center. And Dr. Norton, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Oh, great to be here. Thank you.
Dr. Matthew Goetz is with us. He's a medical oncologist at Mayo. And Dr. Goetz, thank you very much for being with us. Good to have you on the show.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Dr. Norton, is one of the key conclusions here that women were getting chemotherapy that didn't need it?
Well, we didn't know that. I want to emphasize that there's no part of the story that isn't good news. We know that cancer cells, like all cells, need the instructions from DNA. DNA is what makes all cells behave and what makes cancer cells misbehave. And this test looks at 21 genes, the activity of 21 genes, and gives us much more information than we had before about the behavior of the cancers. About half of all breast cancers diagnosed now in the United States do not involve the lymph nodes under the arm, which means they haven't spread to that spot, and that's a good sign.
Mm-hmm.
And about three-quarters or 80% of them also have estrogen receptor, which means that they need estrogen to grow, and we can block that, and we've been doing that for many years. What we didn't know until recently is how many of these patients benefit from getting additional cancer-killing drugs, that's chemotherapy, and that's what this test is all about. We've known for a few years already that people who test very low, that's good on this test, have a really superb prognosis and don't benefit from chemotherapy. That's a score from 0 to 10. And we've known for a long time that patients who score high, used to be 31, and then it got pushed down to 25, have a somewhat worse prognosis, still not terrible, but somewhat worse, but benefit a lot from chemotherapy. And I've seen recent data that shows that the activity of chemotherapy in that group is really quite remarkable.
Dr. Norton, you're throwing a lot of information at me all at one time. And if you don't mind,
sure.
I'd like to take this a bit piece by piece. Dr. Goetz, was the idea that chemotherapy was to prevent a recurrence of cancer in some women that had the kind of cancer that was likely to spread? I know that's just the basics of it, but I'd like you to weigh in on that.
Sure. So exactly like Dr. Norton mentioned, most breast cancers are estrogen receptor positive, and indeed the most important treatment that we can give these women are drugs that target the estrogen receptor, if you will, to block that important factor that is estrogen that's causing the cancers to grow. And so over the course of the last 15, 20 years, we've shown that these drugs that target estrogen are very important. But as Dr. Norton said, there was concern that there might be some patients that, despite the blocking estrogen, that there still may be some benefit of chemotherapy. And we were using a number of the individual gene tests to come up with recommendations, but we were not necessarily conclusive. And so what this test does is provide much more, if you will, validity and evidence that we can actually really identify with much more precision the group of patients that really do need chemotherapy.
So, Dr. Guest, just so I understand this, was this the case that there were a number of American women for whom chemo was recommended even when there was no indication that the cancer had spread outside of the breast tissue? Is that where we were before we saw this research?
Well, I would say that if we step back and we see a woman who's diagnosed with early stage breast cancer, we know, of course, that removal of that tumor is important. But the reason that women develop morbidity and ultimately mortality from breast cancer is the development of micrometastases.
Okay.
And we know that that patients who have these micrometastases, that right now we do not have good tests that can identify those patients that are at highest risk. So one question is, can we identify high-risk patients, that is, patients that are destined to develop a life-threatening recurrence? But even more importantly, we want to be able to determine which of these patients actually benefit from specific therapies. And of course, in the past, we certainly knew that chemotherapy benefited patients overall with ER-positive breast cancer in terms of reducing that risk of that life-threatening distant recurrence. But now it's clear that there's only a subset of patients that benefit from that chemotherapy.
Dr. Norton, should we note here that chemotherapy, being pursued, I know in some cases is very necessary, in other cases is better safe than sorry, has its own risks along with it. That's why part of the reason this study is so important. Is that true?
Well, we've gotten much, much better at handling chemotherapy. When I first started giving chemotherapy, it did have really very severe toxicities. But we've gotten much better at giving chemotherapy now in terms of reducing those side effects. And the kinds of chemotherapies in general that we use for these kinds of patients are really rather safe. I mean, obviously, it's not something you want to go through unless you really benefit from it. But on the other hand, it's not. There's a common misperception there that it is a much tougher than it is. However, I want to emphasize something here that's really very important about this test. It tells us not only the patients don't benefit from chemotherapy, but also they don't need the chemotherapy. In other words, it tells us these patients have a really good prognosis and don't need the chemotherapy to achieve that good prognosis. So that it's good news and good news. But it's also good news for the patients who need the chemotherapy because we now know the chemotherapy really helps them.
I want to make sure I understand what you were saying about chemotherapy, because I think you're right. There's a perception that it's really debilitating, that it carries its own risks, and if you can avoid it at all costs, you should try to do that unless your doctor is saying you really need this. I think I hear you saying that's outdated. The chemotherapy is not like that today.
We've gotten much better, we have ways that can help patients keep their hair, low blood counts and infections that used to be a big problem. We've got very good ways of preventing that. Nausea used to be a big issue, but we've got very good ways of handling that now, too. So, yes, it is something you don't want to go through unless you really need it, but if you have to go through it, it's nowhere as hard as it used to be.
Dr. Goetz, it might be interesting and informative here to remind us what chemo does, because there will still be thousands of women every year who need chemotherapy, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that when you have, in this case, for estrogen receptor positive breast cancer, I tell my patients the most important treatment that we can give is a drug that's going to target the estrogen receptor. And it's important to note that even though we're telling patients that the majority don't need chemotherapy, we're not saying that these patients should go untreated. They should still be treated with the appropriate medications that block the estrogen receptor. But what we are saying is that there are a group of patients with estrogen receptor positive breast cancer where blocking estrogen really is not enough. And that's because the tumor has, for example, developed mechanisms by which it's resistant. And so therefore, treating with chemotherapy, as Dr. Norton said, having a direct effect to kill cancer cells, can be very effective to prevent recurrences or life-threatening recurrences from tumors that may not respond as well to just a drug like tamoxifen or a drug like Arimidex.
Dr. Goetz, I don't want to miss what you just said about some cancers develop mechanisms that are resistant to chemotherapy, or is that what you mean?
No. So if you look at estrogen receptor positive breast cancer,
okay.
we talk about both what was called de novo, or a sort of resistance to treatment up front, and acquired resistance, resistance that occurs over many years. In this situation, we're talking about the risk for mainly for early recurrence for some patients with breast cancer, where we treat them with a drug like tamoxifen or aromatase inhibitor, and that's simply not enough. The cancer cells can develop the ability or have the ability to grow. So what chemotherapy is doing is, if you will, preventing those recurrences up front from patients that would otherwise destined to have, let's say, an early recurrence, simply because the drug tamoxifen or aromatase inhibitor was not going to be able to inhibit the growth of those cancer cells.
I see. Are gene tests now done, Drs. Norton and Goetz, on most breast tumors? Is that standard procedure now? Dr. Norton?
Well, we're doing a lot of tests on breast cancer routinely. We test for estrogen receptor, progesterone receptor, and something called HER2, because if the tumor has too much HER2 in it, we can attack it with anti-HER2 drugs, and now we have a variety of drugs we can use. But this opens up the opportunity to look at many genes simultaneously, and I think that's one of the most important parts of this story, is that we're starting to uncover much more about the biology of cancer than we ever could before. By being able to look at lots of genes simultaneously. And I think that we're going to see many patients getting this kind of test who didn't get it before, because it really is guiding our treatment and really guiding our decisions. But even more than that, I think it's going to tell us a lot about the biology of cancer that's going to help us develop even better drugs going off into the future.
Dr. Larry Norton is with us this morning from Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, and Dr. Matthew Goetz is with us from Mayo, as we talk about this study that came out late last week to give us details about which women with breast cancer benefit from chemotherapy and which women do not. And actually, the headline on the coverage here was that as many as 60,000 women diagnosed with breast cancer will not need chemotherapy as part of their treatment. We're delving into why. Also discussing, as Dr. Norton has just said, the biology of cancer and what researchers and doctors are learning about that and how that is influencing the kind of treatment that we will get for cancer, including breast cancer. As you listen in this morning, if you have had breast cancer, someone in your family has had it, perhaps you've had chemotherapy, how helpful was that chemotherapy? What are your questions about breast cancer, drug therapies, other kinds of therapy? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, on Twitter at @CarrieMPR. If you're a younger woman and you're having your annual breast exams or your breast exams every 2 or 3 years, what kind of news? How does this news affect the way you think about breast cancer itself and treatment for it? 651-227-6000 on Twitter at @CarrieMPR. To Catherine in St. Paul. Hey, Catherine. Hi.
Hi there.
Yeah, and your question for our doctors.
Well, I just finished up about 5 months of chemo last August and had another 8 weeks of radiation.
Wow.
I guess it was 4 weeks of radiation. My oncotype score was high, 39, and I did have a little bit of a spread to a lymph node. So after surgery, they took out a few lymph nodes. But I'm really glad to hear about the research, because now I know that I didn't go through all this for nothing.
Right.
But I'm on an aromatase inhibitor now, and there are a lot of side effects to that. Do they have any ideas if there's anything coming that might have fewer side effects?
Just so I understand this, Catherine, and our listeners, is it when you say you're on an inhibitor, is that a drug?
Right. It's a drug to suppress estrogen, because my cancer was estrogen receptor positive.
And the side effects include?
Oh, my gosh. Everything from memory loss to poor sleeping to incredible aches and pains, bone loss.
Oh, yeah.
Arthritis. There's a really huge number of problems with it.
Serious quality of life things here. Dr. Goetz, what do you know about something that might be in the pipeline that doesn't have these kinds of side effects?
Well, certainly what we do know is that the drugs in our armamentarium for treating estrogen receptor positive breast cancer include the aromatase inhibitors, which reduce estrogen in postmenopausal women even further than for example, when they went through menopause. And we also have the drug tamoxifen, which is an older drug that blocks the estrogen receptor. Now, both of these drugs and classes of drugs have been used in the clinic for quite some time, and they have been shown to be very effective. On average, aromatase inhibitors are slightly better than tamoxifen. But I would just say that there are a number of ways to deal with these side effects. Certainly, one could be to move to a different aromatase inhibitor. Obviously, another possibility would be to switch to a drug, the drug to tamoxifen. I think your doctor, though, is rightfully putting you on the best drug that we have right now, or a class of drugs, and that's aromatase inhibitors. And I think there are ways, including perhaps some supportive measures. People have looked at acupuncture, other ways to deal with some of these side effects. And you hit it the nail on the head. These are not uncommon, and we need to learn how to manage those in for patients that are on these medications and taking them for upwards of 5 years or even longer.
Dr. Norton, I have a question about what you were saying about the biology of cancer. Are you learning that cancer cells behave differently depending on the environment that they're in? Is that going to end up being important to really understand the environment in which they're growing?
Well, yeah, that's a very good question. And there's two parts to that question. First of all, that the fact is that the reason the cancer is cancer in the first place is that it's getting wrong signals from the DNA in it. The DNA is the molecule that makes genes, and genes are made up of DNA, and that's an instruction set for the cell. And the cancer cells are getting instructions and they're making it behave in an abnormal way. And by learning more about how all those genes work and how they work together, that's what's really special about this test, is looking at 21 genes, not just one at a time. We're getting very strong hints about the way the cancer behaves. But think of how remarkable this is. When I started, I'm 71 years old, so I've been involved in cancer medicine almost since the very beginning of modern cancer medicine. When I first started, the word cancer was really a dire diagnosis for everybody, and everybody with breast cancer, was terrified that that the cancer would come back and spread to other parts of the body and eventually even kill them. Look at what we've learned. We've learned how we can assess the cancer and also give medicines like these hormone-blocking drugs and chemotherapy when necessary, and the vast majority of people are cured and never have another problem with that cancer. I mean, that's just amazing, and it's especially amazing to me because I've seen the whole evolution of this from the very, very beginning, and we're talking about patients, 90% plus being totally eradicated of their disease, so that's a remarkable thing.
So,
what's made these advances remarkable is this knowledge base that we're accumulating, and we're going to do even better going off into the future.
So, Dr. Goetz, when we talk about the environment in which the cancer cells are growing, of course, that leads to this sense of individuality, right? Really understanding the biology of the person in which the cancer is growing. I know that's some of the work that you're doing. As you accumulate the store of knowledge that Dr. Norton is talking about, where is that at?
Well, I think that, so first of all, we know that certain types of breast cancer are hereditary. We know that there are certain genetic abnormalities that are passed on that lead to the development of breast cancer in an early age. We also know that the environment that Dr. Norton was talking about plays a critical role. Obviously, the rates of breast cancer tend to be higher in developed countries, and we are beginning to learn over the years that certain environmental factors, including things such as just for example, the place of the world where you're diagnosed, certain factors such as smoking and other things can actually lead to the development of breast cancer. So it is critically important as we understand these factors, not only as we think about treatment, but ultimately what we want to do for our patients is to prevent the disease in the first place. And so I think that the great advances that have occurred with regard to treating breast cancer and leading to improvements, dramatic improvements in mortality and dramatic improvements in survival. And I think now that we're beginning to take a greater emphasis now in trying to understand the role of prevention, and I think that's going to be the next frontier.
A call here from Laura in St. Paul. Hi, Laura. Thanks for waiting.
Hi.
What's your experience
with
this? Sure. Go right ahead.
Okay. So my question for the doctors is, I was treated for non-invasive breast cancer about 10 years ago, and I had the cancer removed and radiation, and then I was in a clinical trial, tamoxifen against Arimidex. It turned out it was Arimidex. My question for the doctors is, why the 5 years? What's the thinking behind the five-year adjuvant treatment with one of those drugs? And you mentioned that some patients might benefit from being treated longer. How do you know?
Dr. Goetz, would you tackle that?
Sure. So, you know, everything that one of the remarkable things, by the way, with regard to the field of clinical oncology is that we base our recommendations on the evidence from clinical trials. And early on, one of the observations was that that if you actually give these medications that block estrogen, that the duration that you so-called starve these cancer cells of estrogen it actually is quite important. So clinical trials initially showed a benefit of 1 year, then looking at 2 versus 1, and 3 was better than 2. Ultimately, 5 was better than 3. And then we have studies, of course, that have demonstrated there perhaps as long as 10 years may be of benefit. So what's not clear, however, is that same precision about understanding which patients necessarily do need to be treated with, let's say, 10 years of therapy versus a patient that might do well simply with 3 or 5 years of therapy. And there are certain things that we know right now in terms of the clinic. So certainly higher risk or higher stage breast cancer patients, for example, if there's nodal involvement, the size of the tumor, will lead to a higher risk of recurrence that could occur late. And so in these patients, we're beginning to think about longer durations of therapy. But again, all these recommendations that we give to patients in terms of duration are directly based on randomized trials where we have an answer and where we're testing large groups of women. And we have some confidence just to say that longer is better than shorter.
Dr. Norton, how far along is the understanding of why some cancers, and because we're talking breast cancer, let's talk about that, metastasize in some women and others don't? I mean, are you able to let me just leave it at that, and then I'll follow up, depending on what you say.
Well, I think we've made enormous progress, and a lot of it is because of science and laboratory, and a lot of it's by the clinical trials that Dr. Goetz has mentioned. We've really learned a tremendous amount already, and this Taylor X study is an example of that, where we can tell patients that they have an extremely high cure rate and that hormone therapy alone is adequate for them. But there's also an enormous amount of information going on in the laboratory now, really dissecting the process. The Breast Cancer Research Foundation has a very large international study called Aurora that's looking at the molecular biology, that is the DNA and the RNA and protein changes in cancers that do metastasize, and trying to figure out exactly what the genes are that makes that happen so we could block it. So I think the future really is rather bright, and we are making progress quickly. We want to make it even more quickly, and that's the importance of research.
This is a conversation building on a study of last week that came out about the fact that women, many women being treated for early stage breast cancer will not need chemotherapy. Chemotherapy will still be necessary for a number of women who are being treated for breast cancer. We're understanding what the meaning of that study is, where the science is on understanding the biology of cancer itself, and where treatment is going for women, young women and older women who are being diagnosed with breast cancer. Dr. Matthew Goetz with us from Mayo, Dr. Larry Norton with us from Memorial Sloan Kettering. And your questions and your experience, really important here. If you've had breast cancer and you're hearing this new research, how does it fit with the treatment that you underwent or that you're undergoing now? If this is something that has affected your family, maybe you're concerned about where your daughter will be on breast cancer and where the treatments will be heading forward in the science, welcome your questions on that. If you're a younger woman, I'm curious about how you're taking in some of this information and this research. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, on Twitter at CarrieMPR, where Len tweets, Dr. Goetz had an appointment yesterday for node-positive cancer. The doctor said if mamma print comes back low risk, no chemo is needed. But the MINDACT trial shows a 1.5% survival improvement with chemo. is that 1.5% worth it? I think that's just an indication of how women are trying to take in, write the latest research on this and make a decision.
And this is exactly the way that we need to be thinking about it. Again, you know, we do know that regardless of the, you know, these assays that are used, that it's still important to understand, for example, the size of the tumor and the nodal status. But there are some women that do have, let's say, one or two positive lymph nodes that likely can still do very well with endocrine therapy alone. And there's actually another study very similar in design to the TAILORx that we have been discussing for women with node-positive breast cancer that's looking at the same question, and that is, do women with, let's say, lower recurrence scores, but yet perhaps higher-risk disease in the sense that the lymph nodes were involved, do those women need chemotherapy? And I think what we can say right now is that we're beginning to see data using these gene expression profiles such as the MammaPrint and obviously the recurrence score that suggests that there is a group of women that still with node positive breast cancer that can do exceedingly well with hormonal therapy alone. But we have less confidence, if you will, that these patients can necessarily avoid chemotherapy. And so these are the sort of discussions that we have with our patients looking at, okay, what is that risk of recurrence? What is the potential benefit of chemotherapy? And as time goes on, we'll have even more confidence in this node positive setting.
Dr. Norton, a question about an inheritance, hereditary influences here. If you do not have the BRCA1 or BRCA2 mutation, does some kind of involvement perhaps of inherited predisposition, I guess, to breast cancer, could that still be a factor? I guess I'm asking, if you're eliminating the BRCA1 and BRCA2 mutations, do you have anything to worry about if this has popped up in your family?
Well, there are other genes that you can inherit from your mother or your father that do give you an increased risk. In general, those other genes give you a very moderately increased risk. BRCA1 and BRCA2, which are genes that we all have, that you can inherit a bad one from your mother or your father, a mutated one, and that really increases your risk quite high. The other genes can increase your risk, but not as high, and they vary in terms of how much. So if you have a family history of breast cancer or of any cancer, getting genetic counseling is a good idea. Having your own genes tested, perhaps the genes tested of other members of your family, especially if they've had cancer, and then seek an expert's advice. It's very, very hard to give this kind of advice in general. Genes are very specific to the individual, very specific to the family. So getting good expert advice that's relevant to you is the most important advice I could give.
Okay, so Dr. Goetz, if the mutations are not, you're not positive for the mutations, but this is emerging in your family, I know you deal with the genetic side of this. Would you agree with Dr. Norton? You need a specialist's advice.
Well, I think so. I mean, first of all, we say is if you're going to be tested, to not only have that testing, but then have an expert with which you can actually discuss the results and then help with interpretation.
Okay.
One of the things, of course, is that, as Dr. Norton said, increasingly we're identifying some additional genes that are associated with moderate risk. And it's very possible, as time goes on, that we will identify additional genes. So genes that we don't know about right now, where if they're mutated, they can lead to the development of breast cancer. So yes, it's critical that when this testing is done, and we think testing is important, that you have an expert to help you to help you interpret those results.
Okay. Call here from Denise in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. Hi, Denise.
Hello.
Hi. What are you asking about?
I have a question regarding the BRCA testing.
Sure.
And the saliva test versus the blood test.
Okay.
My sister and I are both BRCA2 positive. My mom died young of cancer. And my niece and my daughter were tested about 5 years ago, and they were tested using the saliva test, and they both came back negative. And my nephew was tested recently with the blood test, and he came back positive. Just wondering if the saliva test is as accurate in their opinion, or what the differences are with the genetic testing for the BRCA mutations.
So good, Denise, that your family is taking this seriously. Dr. Norton, what would you say?
Well, it doesn't matter where the DNA comes from. What really matters is the laboratory doing the test. And there is published evidence that some of the tests that are being marketed to the general public are not as accurate as the tests that are being done in a medical setting. And so I highly recommend in a high-risk family, such as the one we're talking about, that they seek professional genetic counseling and have the test done. They could be done from what they call buccal smear, which is testing saliva, or actually taking a little bit of the lining of the mouth with a little bit of swab, or the blood test. It doesn't matter where the DNA comes from, but it does matter a lot who does the test and also who interprets the results. Getting really good counseling from somebody who understands these tests, can talk to you, can individualize your situation for you and give you the best advice. That's what's really important, is who does the test, not the source of the DNA.
Dr. Norton, do I hear you saying don't rely on 23andMe for something like this?
I don't want to name anything specific here. I would just say basically is I feel very strongly, and all my colleagues that I work with feel very strongly, that this kind of genetic testing should be done in a medical environment where you're talking to a real expert and the test is done in a very reliable way.
We're going to get the latest news, your calls and questions on the other side of news as we talk about the news last week about chemotherapy and breast cancer treatment, how to better understand the biology of breast cancer, what this research and others that's going on into the genetic influences of breast cancer means for women, younger women, and women all through the different passages of your life, and hearing from a number of women who are in the midst of treatment or who have come through treatment. Good to have your questions. If you've had chemotherapy, what does this research mean to you? If you're making a decision right now about your course of treatment, Dr. Norton, Dr. Goetz, with some general advice there, but good to have the measure of your experience. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter. Back to our conversation now. Dr. Matthew Goetz with us from Mayo. Dr. Larry Norton with us from Memorial Sloan Kettering. Mark called to say the chemo may have been more difficult in the past. It's still pretty hideous. They recommended mammograms every 3 years. My wife's breast cancer was detected 30 days after the exam. The field has a long way to grow, despite the distance that it's come. Dr. Norton, I think that's a good question for you since you've been in the field so long.
Well, I don't know. I don't know quite what the question is.
Well, comment.
Mammograms yearly is a good idea, number one. And indeed, that they're about 85% accurate. With high-risk cases, we also recommend other screening tests, such as MRIs. Sonograms help, too. So that's one part of it. We've made a lot of strides, but we have a lot to go, in the future. But the important thing is that we have made those strides, so it shows you that we can. It shows you that we can cure cancers, that we can prevent their recurring, that we can kill cells that might have sped from the breast, as Dr. Goetz mentioned earlier in the call. And that's a very good sign, an indication for the future. Unquestionably, we have to do better, and we are trying to do better, and we're working hard at this. But we have made progress, and so there's every reason to hope that we're going to make continued progress.
Dr. Norton, after the screening recommendations for mammograms came out, and if I recall the recommendations, if you have no history of breast cancer or high probability of it, that you were all right to have screenings once every 3 years. Now, I hear you're not concurring with that.
Not at all. Memorial Sloan Kettering, we feel very strongly that yearly mammograms still make a big difference. And even in those recommendations what's stated is that not that many more people will have incurable cancer if we delay the test. It's not saying that it's equal. And if you really, if anybody asks me the question, what can I do to minimize my chance of having a lethal breast cancer, yearly screening is still advised. Now, that may change as we move forward in the future. On these kinds of gene studies, we may learn that some individuals have an extremely low risk and don't need screening at all or need screening less frequently. But until we have those tests, Memorial Sloan Kettering still feels strongly that yearly mammography is a very good idea, important.
Dr. Norton, I mean, this is why it's confusing for average Americans, consumers. You know, the recommendation comes out from a board of, I think, highly experienced physicians, knowledgeable people, and then we have people come on and say, well, don't listen to those recommendations.
I can only tell you the truth as I see it. All right, and I was not involved with any of the recommendations that any of the boards that said that we should do screening less often. If the simple question is, what can I do to minimize my chance of dying of breast cancer, in addition to watching environmental factors such as already been described, not taking postmenopausal hormone replacement therapy, for example. Obesity is also a big problem, and people should have a good weight. In addition to that, yearly screening is still very strongly advised by most of the experts in the field.
Dr. Goetz, do you have a view on this?
Well, you know, the only view that I have, and that is that if we look back at the NIH consensus statement years ago with regard to chemotherapy, was that all women with early stage breast cancer should have chemotherapy. And it was because of this exact scenario that Dr. Norton is saying right now with mammographic screening. We can say that overall that there is a benefit. What we don't know definitively is, are there a group of patients that perhaps are such at low risk that they really don't need a mammogram, let's say on a yearly basis, perhaps every 2 or 3 years. And so, you know, the statements, the guidelines with regard to screening have been controversial, and certainly you're bringing up a good point. But I think the issue is that right now we're still a bit in the dark with regard to who actually needs more intensive versus less intensive screening. And so the overall guidelines would suggest postmenopausal women perhaps can go 2 or 3 years. But that, as Dr. Norton said, I think that we still have fairly good data that yearly screening mammogram is the best way to reduce the risk identify early stage breast cancer. And we are going to need clearly better ways to identify the patients that need more intensive versus less intensive screening. And I hope we're going to get there.
Call here from Jane in Roseville. Hi, Jane. Your question.
I was diagnosed after a very long time and multiple mammograms that did not show up anything. I was finally diagnosed with a biopsy with advanced inflammatory breast cancer. Hmm. It was large, and half of my 20 lymph nodes that they took out were positive. So I had chemotherapy immediately, then I had surgery, then I had a different chemotherapy, and then I had radiation. I was on tamoxifen for 8 years, and I'm now on another drug, letrozole, and I envision being on that forever.
And
my
question
is, I was never tested years ago with any kind of genetic testing, and I have a daughter. Mm-hmm. Would it be helpful for me to get tested for anything that might help her?
So now, yeah, Dr. Goetz, your advice on that?
Well, I think absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, the current guidelines suggest that there are women that are sort of an absolute must that should be tested. These are young women that have a strong family history of breast cancer, but there are also some women that have certain subtypes of breast cancer. For example, the so-called triple negative breast cancer subtype, even up to the age of 60, and perhaps even in the absence of a family history, we know that some of these genes, such as BRCA1 or BRCA2, can be altered or mutated in this setting. And so I would encourage you to talk to your oncologist about this, because certainly there may be benefit. And in getting tested and actually knowing, for example, that there is not a mutation can also be reassuring for a patient.
Call here from Therese in White Bear Lake. Therese, it sounds like you're going through chemotherapy now. Is that right?
I am, and this is my second round. I was discovered to have ovarian cancer, and the genetic oncologist decided that I should be tested for BRCA, the genetic mutations for breast cancer. And I was found to be positive, as was my mother, and as were three of my sisters. The thing is, the mutation of my BRCA gene shows up as ovarian cancer and not as breast cancer. I had a double mastectomy, and there was absolutely no breast cancer, and there's no breast cancer in my family. I'm just wondering, I'm going to finish up this second round of chemo, and then they're going to put me on a PARP inhibitor. I'm just wondering, do they have anything to say about the genetic mutation showing up as
sure.
ovarian?
Yes. Dr. Norton.
Yeah, and I think there are parts of the story that I think I would have questions about. In general, the BRCA mutations, there's BRCA1 and BRCA2, predispose to both ovarian cancer and breast cancer. The role of the mastectomies is to prevent breast cancer if you're carrying a significant genetic risk. So the BRCA2 is more associated with ovarian cancer, but there still is a high breast cancer risk associated with that. So I think you should go back to the person that gave you the counseling originally or the doctor who's taking care of you and get clarification on some of these issues so that you don't have any questions. It's very hard to answer these things in general. So I think related to your specifics, I think that having a further discussion at this time would be a very wise thing to do.
Dr. Norton, just to understand this, though, it sounds like you were saying, and perhaps this is meaningful for other women that show up with this BRCA2 mutation, that the mastectomies are prophylactic to prevent the spread of cancer into your breasts. Is that right?
Well, it's to prevent the occurrence of breast cancer in your breast. That the BRCA genes mutations predisposed to getting ovarian cancer and breast cancer, and to a slight degree other cancers as well. So there's other increased screening that we recommend. And a lot of women now, Angelina Jolie is the best example because she came public with it,
right.
are having mastectomies and having normal ovaries removed so that they don't get cancers in those organs. And, I mean, it's very unfortunate that we have to do surgery to prevent cancer and doing the research to try to get rid of that. But until that research is completed, it is a way that you can lower your risk of getting cancer if you're carrying one of those abnormal genes.
Dr. Goetz, I was reading something that the head of the American Cancer Society, Dr. Otis Brawley, was talking about. And he says that he is extremely frustrated by what he calls the Me Too drug development situation. He was talking to NPR about this, and he said, we've got 30 companies working on very similar immunotherapy drugs, and then they go out and they compete for the patents, and it's actually slowing down the development of some of these drugs. Is this something that you've noted overall in drug development for cancer?
Well, certainly, you know, when an investigator, a researcher, or a group of researchers identify a critical pathway that is known to be associated with, for example, in this case, the development of cancer or the progression of cancer, and that if one can target that, that leads to potentially, literally, because there are multiple different drug companies, them developing molecules simultaneously. And if you will, there's a bit of a rush, obviously, to develop the best molecule, and these drugs oftentimes go to market at about the same time.
Huh.
So I think one has to be a bit careful, because certainly the fact that we have multiple different companies that are in that rush to develop drugs that are actually going to cure cancer is a good thing. But you know, there is certainly this issue, and that is that, well, how many checkpoint inhibitors do we need? How many CDK4/6 inhibitors do we need? And I think that that's something that Dr. Brawley does make a good point. So I think we have to be careful not to squelch the research, because some of the research that's actually going on in this rush to develop these molecules is a good thing, and it's a good thing for patients.
Call here from Jessica in Maple Grove. And Jessica, you're a radiologist, is this right?
That's right. I'm a breast cancer specialist radiologist at the University of Minnesota.
Really glad you heard the show. Tell me what piqued your interest and why you called.
So as a breast radiologist, I'm pretty familiar with the screening recommendations from the National Preventive Screening Task Force.
Okay.
As well as recommendations given by other groups. And I just wanted to shoot back to a couple of things that were said there. The task force was composed of people who are not breast cancer specialists, and that was done purposefully in an effort to try to reduce conflict of interest. So the people who were making the recommendations were making those recommendations based on studies that have been done over multiple prior years, and then modeling based on those studies.
Okay.
The studies that they chose were flawed for a variety of reasons. Sometimes it was because of poor mammography. Sometimes it was because of poor training by the radiologists that read those studies. The specific one that I'm referring to is a Canadian study. And even if you take the flawed studies and you extrapolate out the number of lives saved from mammography, even using those poor studies, the percent of lives that could have been saved with yearly mammography is 20% reduced compared to women who would not get mammography at all. If you looked at the gold standard studies that are done that they didn't include in that evaluation, there are prospective randomized trials that are done in the gold standard way that research should be done. Those studies had found that there was a 30 to 50% reduced mortality from yearly breast cancer screening. So, you know, I think that there's confusion about the screening recommendations because the breast cancer specialists are looking at what's been said and are strongly, strongly disagreeing with what the National Preventative
Yes.
Task Force is saying.
Jessica, you're right, because while I was talking to Dr. Norton about that, I pulled it up on a screen here and I saw that the, you know, American Cancer Society is recommending that women can go to every 2 years. If mm-hmm. you want to, you can do it annually, but you don't increase your risk of...
Mm-hmm. And I think even the American Cancer Society was being a little bit political in their recommendations. They're kind of straddling the recommendations offered by the NSPSTF and the recommendations offered by the American College of Radiology and the Society of Breast Imaging. This whole argument is discussed pretty well, very well, actually, on a website put together by our national organization
okay.
called the American College of Radiology, and it's mammographysaveslives.org.
Okay.
They recognize both sides of the argument on there and kind of delve in deep as to where this disagreement comes from.
I just made a note of that. We're going to do another show on this because and we've done a number of them before. I think clarity on this is really important.
I do too.
I'm glad you called.
I'm sitting here reading mammograms as I was listening to your show. So.
good to know. Thank you. Thanks very much for the call. Let me grab another call here quickly from Mitchell in Minneapolis. Hi, Mitchell. Can you make it brief? I'm a little out of time.
Yep, definitely. Yeah, so I'm a cancer researcher here at the University of Minnesota.
Yeah.
And I've just been listening in, and it seems like there's been a lot of confusion from, you know, patients being like, you know, my mother's positive, my daughter's negative. Like, why are these results different? And I'm wondering, you know, in my mind, it's probably like result of like, you know, the different types of analysis. So like for the doctors, like SNP versus whole gene or, you know, a tumor versus a healthy blood sample that's causing the analysis to be ran from that. And I'm just wondering if they think in general, are the doctors like explaining the nuances of these tests enough for patients and like really what, you know, the fine nuances of these mechanisms?
Dr. Goetz, can I put that to you?
Well, I think the first thing is that if there is a deleterious or sort of a bad gene that's running in a family that's leading to the risk of breast cancer, it's important that you be tested because we know that if you don't inherit that gene, so for example, if that gene is associated with blue eyes and you get brown eyes, that in this case, if you don't have that deleterious mutation, you don't have that increased risk of breast cancer. That's why it's critical that you get tested. Certainly, we know that there are other genes and there are the development or carcinogenesis, the development of cancer is complex. So it is not the genes alone, but it is the genes along with other environmental factors that are critical. But again, this is where the counseling aspect is really critical, as Dr. Norton said.
Dr. Norton, a quick question that I think is important here from Twitter. Can you ask your guests, why do we still treat women with DCIS stage 0 breast cancer, even though studies show there's no survival benefit in doing so? Is that true?
Well, DCIS is kind of cancer on the way. It hasn't occurred yet, but the cells are moving in that direction. So DCIS therapy is to prevent a breast cancer from occurring. Clearly, if you do that properly, you have a very significant chance of decreasing it. And that relates to some of the other things we've been talking about. The TAILORx study, depends upon good screening. We're dealing with small cancers that haven't involved lymph nodes yet, and it's a really happy news that many of these patients, most of them indeed, don't need chemotherapy to have an excellent prognosis. If we start to screen less, we're going to have bigger tumors, we're going to have more positive lymph nodes, and we're going to have less of an opportunity to, first of all, do breast conservation, which is a significant thing for many, many women. They don't have to lose their breast. They could have a lumpectomy. But also the chance to avoid chemotherapy. So another reason for screening is not just to save lives. It's to give people the option to save their breast and also the possibility they don't need chemotherapy.
I hear you loud and clear on that, Dr. Norton. Thank you. Thanks so much for the time. Good to have your experience and the benefit of your knowledge. Dr. Goetz, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Larry Norton with us from Memorial Sloan Kettering. Dr. Matthew Goetz with us from Mayo. And if you missed the show, it'll be on the podcast. Lots of good advice.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828. Or tweet Kerri at KERRI NPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.